Hello, and welcome to today's web seminar titled Microsoft Visual Studio Test Professional 2010, the tool for the modern tester, featuring Nason Nadeiri, program manager on the Visual Studio Test Professional team at Microsoft. I'm your host, Francesca Mattu. Before we begin, I'd like to explain how to participate in today's event. First off, if you have any technical difficulties, you may press the help button on your player console. Your console has been optimized for a viewing at a screen resolution of 1024 by 768 or higher. If your screen resolution is set to a lower level than that, you may have difficulty viewing the entire slide. To view this presentation in full screen mode, click on Enlarge Slides located at the bottom center of the player console. Pressing Download Slides will open a copy of the slides, which you can print or save. For your reference, all lines have been placed into a listen-only mode during the presentation. We, of course, welcome your questions during today's event. To submit a question, simply type it into the question field on the left-hand side of your console and then hit the Submit button. We will answer as many questions possible during the Q&A after the presentation. Now, today, this presentation does contain Flash movies. Please disable your pop-up blockers in order to view these movies. Disabling your pop-up blocker must be done from your console. Once the movie starts playing, please do not close the Flash movie window, as there is no way to reopen or restart the Flash movie once it's begun. Also, you'll receive an email in the next day or so that contains a link to today's archive presentation along with a PDF copy of the slides you'll see today. And at this time, I would like to introduce our speaker, Nason.
Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for signing in. It's a pleasure to see so many of you turn out today. And I'm just very excited to speak to you about our new tool called Microsoft Visual Studio Test Professional, which is just released about 2 weeks ago. And so what I would like to do is I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about the state of software quality and the state of the testing industry nowadays, and move into to talking a little bit about how we feel our tool plugs some of the issues which are facing software testers nowadays, and then go into some demos of the tool, and finally wrap up with some questions and answers. So Francesca gave me a brief introduction I thought to mention. I've been at Microsoft for the past 3.5 years, and I've been fortunate to be on this testing team for the whole 3.5 years of my stay at Microsoft, coming in at the point of really looking at should we create a software testing tool, what could we do if we wanted to do something, to the state of actually releasing something. So I've been with the team in the whole journey. Okay, so let's dive right in. Now, unfortunately, this is a webinar, so I can't see any virtual hands go up, but I'd like to ask you, how many of you can relate to this image on your screen? You know, somebody just very frustrated with a piece of software that they're using. Now, normally, we use software to accomplish a particular task, but often those tasks can't be accomplished because we run into the face of bugs, and software isn't at the level of quality that we expect it to be. Now, there's many fundamental reasons that the software that's developed nowadays often isn't at the level of quality that we expect it to be. And we're going to dive into some of those fundamental reasons. But before we do that, I think it would be fun to look at some typical bugs which you might have faced. Here's one bug. So this is a mapping software. We're trying to map going from one place in Scandinavia to another place in Scandinavia. And our software has chosen to route us across, I think, three bodies of water, going into mainland Europe and going into England. Seems like whoever tested this app didn't do that great of a job. Or maybe there wasn't tested at all. Here's another one. This one you have yours truly to thank for. We're definitely no exception to pushing out bugs here and there. And this one is the copy dialogue. And our dialogue saying that, you know, this only will take a few years, maybe a little more than that to copy this over. So you might want to go grab a coffee or take a bathroom break or something while you're waiting. Now, the bugs that exist in applications can be fairly trivial. They can be minor annoyances, or they can be very severe. Here's one fairly severe example. This comes from the F-22 Raptor. It seems like whoever tested this didn't think to test going over the international dateline. Because when this went over the international dateline in 2007, all the computers crashed. And when you're on a fighter plane without any computers, your navigation system doesn't work, which makes it very difficult to land the plane. It also makes it very difficult to navigate at all. So what this clever pilot did is went and found a steam tanker down below, and it tracked it back to shore. So luckily it was able to land. But somebody's life and the plane could have been lost in this incident. Here's another serious one that hits close to home. The Toyota Prius was victim of a very serious software bug. This software bug happened to be in the braking system, which is controlled by an embedded computer. Basically, sometimes braking didn't work. Kind of severe. And because this was severe, Toyota had to issue a huge recall. I believe it's 1.8 million vehicles and counting right now, and has suffered a huge hit in its PR, its public rapport. And I'm sure you're still seeing the commercials that I'm seeing right now trying to fix that public rapport. So while these are a couple of examples, I'm sure you can think of others as well, where you just say, you know, this application which was developed should have been developed at a higher level of quality. And when we look at the world, we see that really the world is being run by software. So as software professionals, testers, developers, architects, it's all of our decisions to decide if we want to fundamentally address some of these problems, or we wish to continue to operate as normal and continue to draw around these issues and not address these fundamental problems. So I would suggest that we try to address some of these fundamental problems. But what are some of these fundamental problems? Well, there's a lot. These are three high-level bullet points of how we view some of the fundamental problems of software quality. I'm just going to go through them, and I'm sure you could add to them as well. The biggest one that I see, and I see this every time I go into organizations, it's fascinating to me, is that just developers and testers, they live in different worlds. You have one group of people who are in charge of functionality and one people who are in charge of quality, but these people, they don't interact together. They don't interact together. They don't speak together. They often have tools which get in the way of them even communicating together, and they have systems which get in the way of them communicating together and working together towards one coherent goal. For example, I've seen organizations where developers and testers sit in different rooms. They sit in different floors. They sit in different locations in one country, or they even sit in completely different countries. They often report to very different people. And because of some of these differences, they often don't have tools that work together. So as a result, the bugs which testers create, developers often view them as fairly useless because they don't necessarily are presented in the format that developers can actually do anything with. Testers often are even aware what developers are working on. And there's no shared tooling between these people. But I see that as a fundamental problem. Another fundamental problem I see is just that the people who are in charge of developing software overall, they often have a hard time of even understanding what's going on. How many development hours are left? How many testing hours are left? How many test cases have been run? How many bugs exist? Because no more bugs exist, does that mean that the software which is developed is really at a high quality? Of the bugs, how many of those have been fixed? How many of them have the developer just thrown away and said, I'm not really too interested in this. I'm going to continue working on creating some more bugs rather than fixing the ones that I have. So the people who are in charge of the development process and the testing process, they often have a hard time understanding even what the state of the development is. I remember sitting in a presentation where a tester mentioned that to create one load report, it took her a week to create. Well, if you're taking a week to create one load report and you're on a sprint of 4 weeks, you've eaten up one week just creating a report on how your testing's going. So I think we need to do better. So going along with this previous point we mentioned before, there's fundamental reasons why it's difficult to create these status reports. One of those reasons is that the data sits in two different systems. And trying to report between those two systems is challenging. And trying to change requirements through those different systems is challenging as well. And so often you can end up in a state where development is working on one thing and testing is working on one thing, and management wants people to change focus, but they don't flow through the system. And this fundamental communication barrier is this breakdown. Another high-level issue we see is that just applications themselves have gone more complex. And because of this increased complexity, the time to test them has increased for many reasons, but for one reason, just that the time to get an application into a state that it can be tested is very large. So large that it can sometimes take 50% of your cycles just trying to create an environment which is ready for you to test. So for this release, we've really tried to go and target these three high-level issues. And I'll refer to them when we get to our actual demos. But let's look at the state of the tooling which is available to software professionals before we jump into that. Now, if we look over time, I think we'll all agree that the tools that have been available to developers have really increased over time. And it seems like every 6 months or 3 months or a couple of days, there's a new tool which is available to develop software more readily, quicker, a new language, a new platform. There's also been a lot of innovation for business analysts and IT pros. But when we look at the testing world, we see that throughout time, there really hasn't been much innovation in the space of the test tooling. Actually, I would challenge you to think about the most common tool that's used in the testing world to test software. Does anybody know what it is? I'll give you a second, and you can put it in the QA if you know the answer. All right, let's see. Yeah, that's right. It's Microsoft Excel. Microsoft Excel continues to be the most common tool used in the testing world for software testing. Just imagine if we asked developers to code in Word day in and day out. When we look at the software industry overall, I think it can be nicely divided down into a spectrum corresponding to the way that people test, with manual testing being over on the far left and basically development, test-oriented development on the far right. We look over the spectrum, we see that the majority of testing occurs on the far left. And there's good reason for this. Often the application is changing very rapidly. People see that their automation is constantly breaking. And people just prefer to test in an exploratory or manual fashion because it makes more sense to them. It's a better return on investment. So we see that 70% of testing that occurs nowadays occurs on this far left. And that's why probably Microsoft Excel continues to be a very popular tool. It is optimized, well, I wouldn't say it's optimized for manual testing, but it allows you to manual test. But when we look at the actual tooling which exists for software testers, we see that the majority of the tools that exist in the world target people who skew towards the development side, who do scripting. And we see that there's a fundamental mismatch between the way that people test and the way that the tools encourage people to test. So given this mismatch, we feel that it's time for a change. We feel that it's time for a tool which is optimized for the testing of today. So I'd like to introduce for you Ellen. We call her the unsung hero of the testing world. We call her the generalist tester. And we discovered a lot about Ellen. Ellen is basically the persona that we use for developing this product. Well, I'd like to to describe some of the characteristics of Ellen for you and see if you can relate to her or see if she exists in your organization. To discover about Ellen, we actually went and sat with people, ate lunch with them, watched over their shoulders, and we saw the way that they tested software. And what we found was very surprising. It's very interesting. We found that basically Ellen is constantly motivated by finding bugs. She's motivated by having a really high level of quality, and she doesn't really think like a developer. We like to say that testers are from Mars and developers are from Venus, because testers, or at least Ellen, she likes to think of every uncommon path through an application. While development tends to focus on new functionality and pushing the next level, this next level of features, Ellen likes to think of the uncommon path. She also likes to manually test and exploratory test, and she leaves automation, by and large, to a few repetitive tasks. And she might not do that herself. She might give it to a developer to go and do. So when we learned all these characteristics about Ellen, we said, okay, we need to actually go and create a new product for Ellen. We need to go and get out of Visual Studio and give Ellen a dedicated experience for her. Because she doesn't want to run automation. She doesn't think like a developer, and she's a little bit scared by Visual Studio. So we chose to do that. So now I'd like to give you a bit of a rundown of the product that we've created targeting Ellen. But in order to do that, I'd like to give you a bit of a story to make this demo a little easier to weave together. So let's go and imagine we're sitting on a development team with Ellen and Elvis. Elvis is our star developer and Ellen is our star tester. And both of them have fairly different motivations. While Elvis tends to focus on functionality and he really tends to push this next feature in, get a new build, and push it out to customers, Ellen tends to be a little more hesitant. And she really wants to, her real focus is on pushing for quality, making sure the application that is developed is really bug-free and something that customers will really love. And she feels that customers will only really love it if it's of a high level of quality. And these guys are in Sprint 2 on an Agile development team working on building a WPF calculator. So let's join them in their development effort. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump into this development effort, and we're going to look at the testing this piece of software through the eyes of Ellen. Remember, Ellen loves to manually test, and she really wants a tool optimized for manual testing. So we believe we created this tool to try to make Ellen a rock star. Okay, so what I'm going to do is the next slide is going to launch open this Flash video. So what you should see is that you'll see your browser pop up a window and the video will start playing. Okay? We're going to jump into Test and Lab Manager. Okay, so you should see the video has opened up. And I am not seeing the video. Are you seeing the video? Oh, wait, I'm seeing the video now. Okay. I'm hoping everybody's seeing the video. Okay, so we've jumped into Test and Lab Manager. And what I have here is I have two test cases, add operations and exploratory testing, that we're going to go and execute. Before I do that, I'm just going to open up the add operations so you can see the contents of it. You'll see that the add operations is rendered just like a work item in Visual Studio, but we've customized it a little bit in the sense that we've added in a test steps control, and for this, for our purposes, we've gone and added in the steps of the test case. So you'll see here that that obviously we're operating inside of Test Professional and we are not inside Visual Studio. So now that you've seen the steps of the test case, I'm just going to close this, and we're going to go and run it. Select these two test cases and then click Run. Okay? And we're transferred over to a tool we call Test Runner. This is a tool optimized for manual testing. And it has all kinds of bells and whistles in it, but the majority of it is for you to focus on manual testing and to use the steps that you authored previously as a guide while you're testing. So here what I've done is I've selected, I'm going to capture a recording strip for testing the add operations, and I'm going to start testing. What this is going to do is this is going to go and capture a recording of the actions that I perform in the UI while I'm testing. I can then leverage this recording strip later on while I'm testing for the next iterations of this test case. Okay, so I've opened up the calculator. You can see it's a little rough because we're only in sprint 2 of our development. And I've checked off that I've launched the calculator. Then what we're going to go do is we're just going to follow the steps of the manual test case. This one's specifying that I need to go and enter in some data and click on add. And each time we go through one step, we're going to go and check off that the test or the step passed, if it in fact passes. If something occurs as we don't expect, we're going to fail a step. And we're just going to manually use our eyes to validate that the expected result is as we expect. So in this case, we're expecting for the answer to be 42. 40 plus 2 is 42. And we're going to check that off. And we're going to move to the next iteration. And then when I click end iteration and move to next, I'm going to get a prompt telling me, asking me if I want to override the existing recording. Remember as we checked the box that said we're going to capture a recording strip. As I've tested, what I've done is I've gone and captured all the UI actions that I've performed. And I can leverage this in the next iteration of my test case. So I'm going to go and leverage this right now by selecting three steps and clicking play. Now the tool is going to actually go and play back all these actions that I recorded previously, but entering in the new data for this iteration. So all as a manual tester I need to do is I need to go and just validate that the UI actually is outputting the answer that I expect. So this seems like it's correct. Minus 21 and 2 is minus 19, so we checked off the step and we're going to move to the last iteration. Now we have this recording at the test step fidelity. So we can actually choose to play back only a few steps or a single step if we like. And so that's what we're going to do in executing this next iteration. So I'm just going to choose to select a single step and click play. That's going to launch the calculator for me. I'm going to choose the next step and click play. Now the reason this is interesting is we call this assisted manual testing, where really all the validation is done by the manual tester, and the tool really just assists you to get through the uninteresting parts. You may have a step, which is to fill out a huge form. Wouldn't it be nice if the tool could just fill out that form for you? That's the idea here, that you can just play at the fidelity that you want. Okay, so we just manual tested. We can validate that the add operations occurred as we expected, and we're happy. Now what we'd like to do is go do some exploratory testing and just use our own brain to validate that the application is running as we expected, it is bug-free. So what we're going to do, we're going to try some valid inputs, we're going to try some invalid inputs, and we're just going to try to find some bugs. So here I'm going to try 5.5 and press add. Okay, the application isn't crashing yet. Let's see if I put in negative inputs, that works. Okay, that's working all right. Let's try for divide by 0. All right, that works. Okay, now let's try putting a single input. Click add. Okay, the application crashed. So as Ellen, I get an evil grin on my face saying, okay, I found a bug. Elvis, develop something of a higher quality. So what I need to do is I'm going to fail this step and close the program at the same time. I've captured a screenshot for it, and I'm going to enter in a comment for this result, say, hey, the app crashes for a single input. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and file a bug right then and there. But since I was exploratory testing, I could have been testing for hours, right? And I don't want to have a huge log of exact, or I don't want to show Elvis a huge log relating to my exploratory testing session. So what I'm going to choose is that I'm actually going to choose the range to put into this bug, the range of actions to put into this bug, so that Elvis isn't overwhelmed when he goes and looks at this bug. So I'm going to select that range to create the bug. And then what's inputted for me is a bug which is already formatted, already filled out for me with some rich logs, which we're going to go into it a little bit later, describing this issue. So that Elvis has a very rich look, a very rich feel for what actually happened in the application. So I'm just going to enter in a title, assign it to Elvis, and give Elvis a little bit of hell. Say, yo, Elvis, fix this. I'm going to save and close this. Then we're going to return to Test and Lab Manager. Okay. Now remember, we executed, or we ran two test cases. So we can see now that the two test cases were previously marked as needed to be run, have now been marked as failed and passed. So their most recent result has been updated. And we can go look at the bug which we just created. So we created a bug to cover the fact that for a single input, the app crashes. But wouldn't it be good to have a test case to cover that scenario as well? So that a tester in the future can run it and validate if this is fixed or not? I think it would be. So what we're going to do is we're going to close this up. I'm going to say I'm going to choose to create a test case from this bug. In clicking Create Test Case from Bug, we go and pre-author the test case for you using the steps which were captured by the tool automatically. So we can see here that the tool captured in a verbose way all the actions that were performed in the UI. Remember, this was an exploratory test. We didn't actually author these before. So it captured all these for us, and these were when it inputted to become the steps of a test case. So as a tester, all I need to do is quickly clean that up, delete some of the steps, add in perhaps some validation, not validation, but some expectations, and close the test case. And then very quickly, I have a test which covers this scenario. And in saving and closing it, I can see that now this is scheduled to be run by a tester. Okay, so that was manual testing in a nutshell. So what did you just see? Well, you saw a few things. One, you saw a very optimized manual testing experience. We really want to make manual testers rock stars. And we really feel that some of the functionality which we've added in around fast forward for manual testing, an exploratory testing workflow, should allow your testers in your organizations to really get this first-class tooling experience. So you saw that experience. You saw the optimized manual testing experience, both in exploratory and in manual testing way. And you also saw the creation of rich, high-quality bugs with a single click. And in the next demo, we're going to actually go in and see what that bug actually looks like. Okay, moving on. Remember earlier we discussed that one of the fundamental issues software developers face is that the silos and the silos which developers and testers sit in are very different. And because of those silos being different, basically people don't communicate, and often the quality of software is developed suffers. So part of our solution which we developed is to develop this in the context of a whole software development family, Visual Studio. So software testing sits as one piece of the puzzle of software development. It sits in the context of this whole family of Visual Studio products which have been developed. So there are very rich tools developed for developers, but there are also very rich tools developed for testers. And each one of these tools has as its backbone Team Foundation Server, which serves as a central brain or central repository, central database for all the software development data. So all the source code sits in there, all the work items, all the reports, all the data needed to generate reports sits in Team Foundation Server, so that a project manager can get a very clear picture of what's going on. This tool also facilitates the communication between everybody who's in the software development system. So let's look at an example. Let's go and take three individuals who are typically involved in the software development process: a business analyst, a tester, and a developer. So a very typical scenario is a business analyst. He sits in his own world, and he's more focused on user stories. He's most focused on functionality. What value can I deliver to the customer? So he's going to go and author some user stories. Then a developer and tester are going to come in. They're going to say, okay, I see these user stories. Developer needs to develop for it, so he's going to go and break that. He's going to go and create some tasks, and he's going to link this to the user story. The tester needs to make sure the quality is high, so they're going to go and look at this user story. and then create some test cases. Then as development goes on, development's going to go and add in some code, and when that code's ready, he's going to go and check it in, associating it to tasks. And when he feels it's ready to actually get deployed, he's going to go and deploy this build and tell testing, hey, you might want to go and fix this. Testing is going to see that there's going to be a new, there's a new build which has been deployed, and they're going to start testing it. They're going to run their tests, which they authored previously, and when the ones fail, they're going to go and file bugs. Development's going to go and see that these bugs exist because they're in the same ecosystem, and they're going to fix them. They'll see all those rich bugs, and when they're alerted that they actually exist, they'll go and fix them. Those will get mirrored in a new build, which testing can go and see the bugs which have been fixed, and they can actually go and validate them. And we'll see how this process actually works in a second. So with all this data being in one repository, that other bullet of project status being difficult to understand becomes a solved problem. So with Team Foundation Server, project managers are given the ability to see at a high level what's going on, what's development doing, what's testing doing, to the level of what lines of code have been fixed, or which requirements have been implemented, which test cases have been run. So as a result of being able to see all of that, project managers are able to have a clear status of how the project is going. And all this information is available to everybody who's in the software development system. So testing can get a clear vision of what development's doing, and development can get a clear vision of how testing's doing. And all this information is made available by a personalized dashboard where one can see the trends over time. So one can see if development's going well or if testing's going well, and everybody has visibility into what each other is doing. Here's another view of another dashboard. This is with other charts in it. All these charts are customizable by the user, so you can choose to look at the type of data that you're interested in. All of this data is stored in a data warehouse, which is regularly updated on at least a daily basis, so one can see trends in their development effort over time. So we feel with this integrated formula that problem of understanding what the status of a project is becomes solved. Normally we show this to pointy hairs. They get very excited. So that was at a macroscopic level. Let's look at a microscopic level, how that integration really helps you, the software developers. So I'd like to go in and show you another video of how this development really helps you. We're going to go and look, we're going to go fast forward a little bit in time and say that that bug which we previously found has been fixed. And Ellen's going to want to go and validate that that's actually been fixed. But before we do that, I'd like to show you the bug through the eyes of the developer. So we're going to jump into that first. Okay, I'm getting some notifications that people are saying the videos are hard to view, or for some reason they're not coming up. I don't know what to tell you. It might be that either you're viewing it in Firefox. I had some issues with that, so I'd suggest trying to view this in Internet Explorer. Failing that, I'd suggest disabling your pop-up blocker. Those are the two suggestions that I have. And I'll try to summarize the video when we're done. Okay, so we're moving forward. The video you should see should pop up for you. Okay? So remember previously, Ellen went and filed a bug. That bug covered the fact that for a single input, the application crashed. So let's go and look at this bug through the eyes of Elvis, the developer. And remember, Elvis is skeptical, right? He wants to work on more functionality. He doesn't want to keep on going and fixing bugs, right? One of my mentors, he likes to say that developers tend to want to work on creating new bugs. They don't want to work on the bugs that exist. So Elvis is going to go into Visual Studio, and he's going to open this bug, which Ellen authored. And he's going to look through it, and it was a very skeptical eye, saying, I don't really want to fix this. But the tools kind of made it difficult for Elvis to do this. So Elvis is coming in, he's saying, oh, you know, Ellen, probably you're testing the wrong application or you're testing the wrong build. Show me what really happened. So he's going to open the screenshot that Ellen captured. He says, huh, okay. I see there's a screenshot that exists. All right, well, looks like the application did crash, but you know, maybe she was testing the wrong application, or I don't know, maybe she did something really funky. He says, what actually happened? So he opens the action log and says, huh, okay, in a very readable format, I can see what actually occurred in the application under test. She entered 6 and nothing, and it crashed. Hmm. Okay, but I'm still skeptical. Maybe she's just lying to me. So he opens up a video, which shows literally what occurred in the application when she was testing it. What were the actual actions she was taking while she was testing? You can see, okay, 5.5 worked okay. Some other inputs worked okay. 6 and nothing? Oh, caused a crash. All right, Elvis says, okay, I'm defeated. I gotta fix this. But what actually occurred? What lines of code were being executed? So Elvis opens up this iTrace file, this IntelliTrace file, and he sees that there's a log showing him exactly which lines of code were executed and showing him a stack trace of what actually occurred. And if he double clicks on the line of code, he's actually taken to the line of code which caused the crash. And he's able, in this debug view, to go and step forward and backwards. So Elvis is convinced. He says, okay, well, I know the problem. I'm going to go and fix this. So what he goes to do is he fixes the bug, and he creates a new build and asks Ellen to go and check it out. So Ellen now comes back in, being alerted by Elvis, say, okay, go and validate that this new build solves your bug. So Ellen's going to come in. She's back in Test Manager. And she's going to go and see if she should go take this new build into test. So she's going to go to the assigned build tab, and she sees that in taking this new build, she can see the differences between the build she was previously testing and the test which she's the build which she's evaluating to take. And she sees in the build she's evaluating to take that this bug that she was looking at before, in fact, has been fixed. You can see the comments that Elvis made, said, okay, this is making it more robust. But Elvis is basically saying, oh yeah, this should be fixed because I just made this app more robust. So Ellen, on the one hand, she's really happy that this has been fixed, and she wants to go and validate this. But on the other hand, she's really skeptical because she sees also that in doing this new build, Elvis went and added in a whole bunch of new functionality. And the new functionality which he added in might invalidate the test which he previously run. So she goes and takes the new build into test, and she sees this dialogue saying, do you want to view the recommended test? So she clicks on this button, and she sees that we're recommending for her to rerun 4 tests based upon code churn. Ellen's a little confused. She scratches her head and remembers that what we're actually doing while she's running the test is we're actually tracking the lines of code which are being covered. So if Elvis goes and updates one of those lines of code, we actually recommend that you might want to go and rerun those tests. So Ellen's happy. She feels really assured. She goes and resets those 4 tests so she can go and run them again because she's not sure those passed anymore. But she's going to do that later on. Right now, she wants to go validate that bug, which Elvis said has been fixed, in fact, actually has been fixed. So she's going to select the bug and click verify. So this bug was actually caused by a different bug in the system to test for invalid input. So what we're going to go do is, in clicking verify, it launches the test case which was associated with this bug. And if this bug actually passes, one can say, or sorry, if this test case now passes, one can say that this bug has actually been fixed. So in clicking verify, she launches test runner, and she's going to go and perform these actions manually. But what she's going to do is she's going to capture a recording strip so that if this bug, in fact, actually is fixed, she can pass it over. She can pass the test case back to Elvis and say, Elvis, please go and automate this since this has now been fixed. So she's capturing a recording strip and she's launching the calculator app, the new build of the calculator app. She's going to capture a recording. So this time she's testing for the invalid input, so she's going to try for negative numbers. She's going to try for fractions. She's going to try for divide by zero. And then she's going to try the issue which caused the bug to begin with, entering only a single input. Now notice as I'm going through, I'm checking off the steps each time I pass over them. What happens here, this makes sure that I actually capture this recording strip at the step fidelity. So that if later on I actually want to play back at the step fidelity, I can. Okay, so we've gone and tried our invalid input, divide by zero, and we're trying our single input, and we see in fact that the bug is fixed. We get an error message. We get an error message if there's only a single input. So for Ellen, she's feeling good to Elvis. She's not going to say that that's a bug. Says, well, the application doesn't crash. It's definitely an improvement. So I'm going to say that this has actually been fixed. So she's going to end her test and go back to test in Lab Manager, saving her recording strip. So now this test is marked as passed, and this bug which we were trying to validate should be marked as closed, right? So we just went and ran the test case which caused the bug. The test case now passed, so we can say that the bug has actually been fixed. So Ellen is actually able to say, you know, Elvis, good job, you fixed this. She's going to close the bug. After she closes the bug, she's going to go and assign the test case, which she just ran, to Elvis, to say, Elvis, please go and automate this. And it's the last step in our demo we're going to actually do that. Okay, so she opens the test case, you're going to assign it to Elvis, and say, Elvis, please automate. Okay. All right, so that, I hope you all were able to see that video. I'll summarize what you just saw. So you saw a little bit at the microscopic level how the Team Foundation server can serve as a collaboration hub, with testers and developers able to interact together and project managers able to see their statuses. So you saw clearly that both Elvis and Ellen got visibility into what each other are doing, and the tool facilitated their communication. And that communication wasn't just, you know, a text conversation, but it was also very much facilitated by the tool of saying, okay, that this new build exists, development has created this new build, testers get visibility into that, these are the lines of code which have been changed. These are the bugs which exist, and also the statuses of just every work item in the system. Finally, you also saw how developers and testers are able to leverage each other's work. You saw that when Elvis opened this bug, he saw a very rich bug. So the work that Ellen did was very valuable to him. So not only did she find the bug, but she was able to find even the line of code which caused the issue. So Elvis was able to very quickly leverage Ellen's work. The last point of just communication being built into the tool, I think, is what we just mentioned. Okay, the last demo that I'd like to show for you is the last, just follows up on the last demo. So remember, Ellen, she assigned the test to Elvis to say, Elvis, please go and automate this since this has been fixed. So she assigned the bug to Elvis, or she assigned the test case to Elvis to go and fix. So what you should see now is another flash video popping up, and we're going to put on Elvis's hat. And Elvis is going to go and run a query, and he sees the test cases which are marked to him to go and automate. He sees, okay, this is the manual steps of the test case. Sees that this is now marked. He can see Ellen's comments. He's going to say he wants to go and create a coded UI test. He's going to call this invalid inputs. In creating this code of the UI test and clicking OK, he's going to see a dialog that comes up that says, hey, do you want to leverage any work which has already been done? So yeah, I like that idea of leveraging work. I like the idea of doing less work. So he's going to go and leverage the existing recording which Ellen created while manually testing. So he's going to go and import the recording strip into Visual Studio, which is associated with the test case. I'm just going to click yes on this. And this recording strip is translated into .NET code. in a very readable way. In importing it, we've created a UI map of the application. But if Elvis wants to go and add in validation, he can. And he can leverage the work which Ellen has done. So what we're going to do, Elvis is first, he's just going to go and run this test. You can see what it actually is covering, what the recording strip covers. And then once he sees what it's actually covering, what he's going to go and do is he's going to go and add in some validation. Because he wants to actually verify that this test can be run as a part of a build process, and he doesn't have to manually sit there and verify that the right result is outputted. So what he chooses, he says, go and create a coded UI test or a coded UI test. He goes and selects to use the coded UI test builder, and he's going to use the scoping tool to go and drag and drop which control he would like to validate. So he's going to drag it over to the answer, and he's just going to add an assert on the text field to make sure that error is actually outputted when an input is provided and another input isn't. Okay, so we're going to go and generate some code for this, have this assert added in for us. Yeah, that seems fine. Go add and generate. We see that this code is inputted into Visual Studio by the tool. We want to go and run and look at the definition. We can. You can see that the assert was added in, and what it's actually asserting on is verifying the text answer equals error. And just to make sure, before we actually check this in, we're going to go and actually run this code to make sure this is actually validating. And just go and run it. You can see the tool goes and builds, and will run for the same automation, but now validating that the right answer is outputted at the right time. Okay, so we see that it passes. So now Elvis, he's gone and automated this, but this code exists inside of Visual Studio. He wants to go and run this inside of Test Manager. He wants to go and run this as a part of the build process. He wants to set up that basically, as a part of a regression suite, he can be sure that this test is going to be run. So what Elvis is going to go do is he's going to go and check in his code, and then he's going to associate that code with the test which Ellen sent his way. So he chooses the test method, which is associated to it. You can see now that the automation status on the work item is flipped to automated. So the test can now be run in an automated fashion rather than a manual fashion. And if we flip back to Test Manager, we can see that the test, which exists with many invalid inputs, has now been marked as automated. So if we wanted to run it here, we could. In the interest of time, we actually won't. We can also run this as a part of the build process, or we can also run this as a part of the lab deployment workflow, which I haven't actually gotten into. Okay. So we've now worked all the way through the puzzle. We've gone from the point of finding a bug, seeing to it that it's fixed, fixing the bug, validating that the fix has been made, and then actually automating the fix. So you saw in Elvis automating the fix that he was able to leverage the work of Ellen. He was actually really happy to have Ellen on his team because he was able to work together with her. They're able to collaborate together. He's able to leverage the recording strip that she created. And when he imported the recording strip into Visual Studio, he didn't need to go and learn another scripting language, but he was able to actually code in .NET, C# in this particular case, but it could have been VB or any other .NET language. And once he checked in the code and he added the validation, he was able to run that test as a part of a build process or run it inside of Test Manager, so the other people on his team can leverage his work as well. So you might be asking yourself, you say, okay, well, you just demoed a WPF calculator. Will this work for my application? Well, the answer is, by and large, maybe. out of the box, we support the most recent versions of Internet Explorer, WinForms, WPF, Silverlight, and we're working on the rest. Silverlight will be supported in a TBD date. The other languages are being worked on by partners, or if they're not being worked on by partners, there are opportunities for partners to go and extend our ecosystem. This is a platform which can be extended. Another thing I should mention is often when I put up this slide, people think, oh, okay, well then this means that my manual testing isn't supported because I'm testing, I don't know, testing a Flash application. That isn't true at all. Our manual testing solution supports pretty much any platform. Just the level of the richness of the bug is going to vary based upon the platform that you're testing. For example, if you're testing a Flash application, you probably won't get an action log. You won't get things like IntelliTrace to be able to go to the actual source code, but you'll get a very rich bug nonetheless. You'll see the steps which have been passed and failed. You'll always have video collection. So the manual testing is definitely platform agnostic. It's just the level of the richness of the bug which you create depends on the platform that you're testing. And if you have any specific questions, I'll take those in the Q&A. Wow, that really flew by. let me summarize what you saw. I hope it wasn't too much of drinking from the fire hose. We first started this presentation by discussing some of the fundamental problems that exist in developing software nowadays and talking about the state of the industry and discussing the gap that exists between the way that software is tested nowadays versus the way that the tools encourage people to test. And so we really feel, and I hope you see after seeing these demos, that this tool that we've created, Microsoft Test Professional, is optimized for the testing of today. It is a tool which tries to make manual testers rock stars and give them the tools that they need to test in the manner that they're used to testing. Since this is built as a part of the team, the Visual Studio family, it can lead to a tighter integration between everybody who's involved in the software development process, specifically developers and testers. And because of this integration and increased communication, it can lead to increased project success and hopefully overall better quality software. And because all this information is in the tool, everybody gets visibility into what is happening. And everybody has an ability to see at a high level what is being tested, what is being developed, and see the overall see to it that overall their project is running on schedule, and they're able to make adjustments if needs be. And hopefully this will lead to greater predictability and lower cost to actually develop the software. So hopefully you agree that this is a pretty great tool, and you're interested in finding out more about it. If you are, I would highly encourage you to try it out. We have a free demo or a free trial. You can download at Microsoft.com/Visual Studio/test. If you'd like to know a little bit more, feel free to connect with an expert. We also have lots of demos available online at Channel 9. I have one that I gave, I think, about a year and a half ago, but those have definitely been updated since that time. So Channel 9 is our repository for looking at demos and discussing the product. I'd also encourage you to read over our team blog. Our team blog, I think, really touches on every nick and cranny of the product. We've really done extensive documentation, so I'd encourage you to look that over. And finally, if you have any questions, please feel free to contact me. I'm always very happy to hear from customers. I'm always happy to try to solve problems or hear of issues that you have so that we can either try to address them or I can see to it that it's routed to the right individual. Okay, and just in wrapping up, I should mention that this, like I mentioned before, Test Professional sits inside of a family of products. There are tools which exist for everybody in the software development ecosystem. It exists as a standalone SKU, we call it. Test Professional includes all that UI that you saw, saving the Visual Studio automation experience. Okay, so that's all I had at this time. I'd like to open it up for questions. Thanks so much for joining me. It's really a pleasure to have this opportunity to talk to you about a product that I'm just so passionate about.
Right. Well, Nissan, before we start Q&A, I do want to remind the audience that you can submit your questions to Nissan by typing it into the window on the left-hand side of your console and then clicking the Submit button. During Q&A, a short survey is going to appear in your console. If you would, take a moment to complete it because your response is going to help us develop our web seminar program to best fit your needs. And with that, I'm just going to jump right into Q&A. Got a lot of questions in queue, so I'm just going to start from the top, Nathan.
Okay.
Can we play this with the Test Professional tool without a TFS 2010 server?
So I believe the question is, can you use Test Professional without Visual Studio Team – sorry, we changed the name – without a Team Foundation server? Mm-hmm. Is that the question?
Correct.
Okay. The answer is no.
Okay.
This is based upon based upon our server. It's a client tool. The whole idea around, I mean, as you saw before, we really want people to fit in one ecosystem, and we feel that the server is crucial to that. That said, the server is fairly cheap. I think it's something like $500 or something. So if you want to just have your testing sit by itself, that's fine. You just need to set up a Team Foundation server.
Okay, great. Can load testing be performed using Test Professional?
So the answer to that is specifically by and large no. Load testing exists inside a Visual Studio. Test Professional is a SKU of the product. If you wanted to do load testing, you need to have a license for Visual Studio. And there's a I should bring up another slide which discusses licenses, but I'd encourage you to talk with one of the experts about the specifics of load testing. I hope that answers the question. Specifically, Test Professional is the name of the SKU. The name of the actual UI is Test Manager. So I assume by that you're asking if you were to have a SKU of Test Professional, would that include load testing? And the answer is no.
What if the source code is in rational clear case? Could Elvis still use Ellen's work?
Could Elvis still use? So long as you have a copy of Team Foundation Server, Elvis should be able to go and in some manner view Ellen's work. The manner, like I mentioned with the automation slide, the level of support and the level of richness of the experience is going to be better if you have an integrated system. So we would encourage you to use Team Foundation source control, but if you can't, you could use Rational as well.
Is it possible to import automated test scripts written in .NET languages from other tools?
Is it possible to import test cases written in .NET languages written in other tools?
Or automated test scripts written in .NET languages from other tools?
The answer is probably maybe. it would depend on how you're running it, and it would depend on how they've been authored and your test runner. If you're talking about unit tests authored in, say, an unit or something, just as you're able to run them in Visual Studio, you could run them. The level of running them from the command line may be a little less. I mean, we'd have to go into exactly what kind of scripts you're trying to import.
This person says he can't get Test Manager to launch with TFS 2008. So must he upgrade before using the trial version?
Yes, that's correct. You do. Since we're based on a server, the server components needed to be updated. So yes, you do need to have a 2010 version of the server.
If it supports Internet Explorer, as you said, how well does it work with Internet Explorer pop-ups? That's the first question. And then the second question, which I'll repeat later, how does it react if the unique IDs of a UI control changed? And then there's a subset to two. I think I'll stop there. I'm just going to go with the number one right now. So back to question one. If it supports Internet Explorer, as you said, how well does it work with Internet pop-ups?
I believe it should work okay. I mean, we're capturing IE DOM, so if, say, for example, you enter in an address in the address bar, we would capture that. If you're clicking the back button, things like that, we capture that. So I believe with pop-ups, you should be okay.
Right. So here's the second half. How does it react if the unique IDs of a UI control changed? And what if the tool easily adapts to the UI recognition, but we need both versions of the scripts to test against new and older versions of the SUT?
Okay. So I think the question is, if the UI controls change, am I going to have to re-record? The answer to that is probably yes. I believe we bind to the friendly name, and so long as the friendly name doesn't change, you should be okay. If that does update, then you would have to go do another recording, or you'd have to edit your code. The code is available to you. I mean, it's just code. So if you go and change your UI control, you might need to go and check or change which UI control you're searching for in your automation. But that's just in the Visual Studio experience. In the test runner experience, you would need to go and do another recording. We've tried to make the recording experience fairly easy. So rather than have a very line-level detail of re-record this step, we've erred on the side of just re-record the test case. As you saw, I mean, it was a fairly simple process.
All right. Was Lab Management released with the Visual Studio 2010 released last week?
was Lab Manager released with Visual Studio Test Professional last week? It's currently available in beta. As far as given an official RTM tag, Lab Manager hasn't been given that tag yet. But, I mean, that said, you can still use it. It's fully functional. It's just we haven't given it the RTM label.
When would training from Microsoft become available on this, and how much, when will it become available?
Training on Test Professional?
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually really know. There are books which are available. We definitely have partners who are signed up, and I could refer you to partners. If you try to go and ping the experts, they can definitely refer you to people who would be happy to give you training. As far as a training that I could actually recommend, I'm not in a position to be able to do that.
Okay. If you have to re-record tests, how is there a return on investment for automation?
If you have to re-record tests, what is the return on investment for automation? Well, we've made the process of re-recording automation fairly simple. As we mentioned before, we see the whole spectrum of testing broken down from generalist to specialist, and we see that most people in general choose not to invest heavily in automation because it breaks. And rather than have a very rich very rich experience to go and re-record at a finite level, we've chosen to re-record entire test case. We see that as a return on investment because the process is very simple. I think it's a good return on investment. If you don't, I mean, you're welcome to your own opinion.
Okay. Just waiting for the questions to pop up. Sorry about this. Is there a Microsoft Online virtual environment to test the product without having to download a trial version?
Is there an online available version of the product to test the product without needing to download it?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, currently that answer is no. I wish I could say yes to that one, but we haven't been able to set that up yet. But if you talk to one of the experts, they may be able to set you up or get you up and going a little faster. And actually, the installation of the server has become fairly painless. So as long as you have a box that you can put the server on, you should be able to get up and going in a day or so.
Can the automated test be parameterized to run on different environments, for example, test versus production?
Can the automated test be parameterized to run on different environments, for example, production or was it production or?
Production or test?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's just code, right? So so long as you're setting the right things in your code, absolutely, you can parameterize. And there's actually an experience that I didn't show you, which basically allows your tests, which are parameterized, to leverage that parameterization in the automation experience. So absolutely, yes.
All right. Well, we've run over a little bit, and we're going to continue to answer questions here. So we're going to continue to go on with our presentation, and it's 5 minutes after the hour, so I think we'll end.
And go for another 5 minutes or so?
Another 5 minutes.
Okay.
All right, so continuing on. Is the migration path from 2008 to 2010 easier? We've had a lot of problems moving from 2005 to 2007.
Okay. Yeah, actually the migration path is fairly painless. There's an experience, I believe it's called a power tool, on Team Foundation Server, which allows you to detach an entire project collection and reattach it as a 2010 version of the project. So upgrading a server should be fairly painless as long as you're migrating everything. And if you have test assets or test cases that have been written in 2005 or 2008, those are MHT files. We actually have a test case importer tool, which will allow you to import your test cases from previous versions. I should also mention that if you have test cases which have been authored in Excel, the test case migrator tool will also help you to migrate your test cases to our new system.
All right. What information does test impact analysis provide?
So test impact, what it does is it goes and creates a record of which lines of code have been hit while you're testing. Some people think that sounds a little bit like magic. It's pretty cool stuff. Basically, we measure the code path that your test goes through, and we store that in our database. And then when development goes and makes a check-in, we go and say, okay, did that check-in go and run through the code path that this test went and ran through? And if it does, we flag that test and say you might want to run it again. So you saw when I demoed it, differencing between one build and another build. You're able to see all the tests that are recommended to be executed again between those two builds. Well, those are all the tests that have had their code paths impacted from one build to another. So specifically, you saw, say for example, you saw divide operations was suggested to be run again. Well, that's because the code path with Elvis and fixed was around adding invalid inputs, and what he just basically did is he added an exception to he added a try catch block to each method, and that impacted all the tests which go through the regular code path. So that's why they were suggested to be run again. I hope that answers it.
All right. And does Test Professional have requirements tracing built in? If so, will new iterations of the same project do the same sort of recommendations of tests to run that are spawned by new code?
Okay, so we need a code. You need to at least run the test once in order for it to be recommended, because we need to have knowledge of what code path that test goes through. As far as the other question on does it have requirements built in? Yes, absolutely. You actually saw the tests that I was running; they were actually directly linked to a requirement. If I had the ability to show my desktop, I'd actually just flip over there and show you it. So you can import a requirement into Test Manager, and then that requirement serves as a container for all your test cases, so that in running them, they're traced back to the requirement. And if you open that requirement, you can obviously see the tasks which are associated to it as well. And a project manager can go and overview, say, okay, for this requirement, which tests exist, which ones have been run, which development tasks exist, which ones have been completed.
Okay, is there a way to track testing across a variety of operating systems, for example, XP, Vista, Windows 7?
Absolutely. So we have the ability, I didn't demo this, but you can break down your testing to different configurations. So if you wanted to test Windows Vista, Windows 7, and XP, you would set up a configuration for each one of those, and then you can specify for the tests which exist in your plan which ones to run against which operating system. You can also set up with a default for your testing. And basically, if you set up, say, I have test X, and I want to run this against XP and Vista, you'll see when you actually test that you actually have two copies for your execution, one to run against XP and one to run against Vista. But in your planning mode, you just see a single, you see a single instance that's set up to run two times.
All right. Well, it's 3:10 now. Do you want to take one more question before we go?
Sure, I'll take one more question.
All right. What does analyze test run tab does, or what does it do?
Good question. Analyze test runs is basically an overview of the test runs which you've kicked off. After I automated the test, I could have gone and run it as a part of test manager. And you can imagine if I was running, say, 300 tests, it would be nice to have a visual way of going through the tests and seeing which one passed, which one failed, which one do I need to investigate a little bit more. So we call that test run analysis. So you can pull up the list of your test runs and drill into them to see a report of the test runs which you've kicked off, seeing what the status of them, which tests have passed, which ones have failed, and quickly mark which tests are a product issue, which ones are a test issue, and see graphs corresponding to that in the test run report. And that information that you input there is actually aggregated up, so you can see for your whole plan what are the statuses and what's the breakdowns of the tests which haven't passed, what reasons haven't they passed. This is a very extensive product, so it's a little hard to try to demo it in an hour. So I'd encourage you to try to jump in, and so you can see all the corner features of it, or at least contact an analyst. Or if you have more questions or something, please feel free to ping me. My contact is n.nadari@microsoft.com. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and I hope you guys like the tool.
All right. Well, thank you. And that wraps up our Q&A session, and it also ends our event for today. I'd like to thank our speaker, Nason, for his time, and I would also like to thank Microsoft for sponsoring this event. Also, a special thank you goes out to you, the audience, for spending the last hour and 10 minutes with us. Have a good day, and you may now log off.